Our first case this morning will be King v. Shinseki. Mr. Barron?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Michael Barron, and I appear on behalf of the appellant and veteran in this matter, Nathan King. Mr. King appeals from the decision of the Veterans Court based upon the Veterans Court's interpretation of rule of law regarding the treatment of veterans' lay evidence in matters concerning claims for service-connected injury or illness. Additionally, Mr. King appeals from the Veterans Court's decision concerning the interpretation of 38 U.S.C. 7104-D1 regarding the inadequacy of the Board's statement of reasons and bases, particularly as it applies to the issue of the lay evidence, which we raise first.
Well, they considered the lay evidence, right?
And yes, Your Honor.
They considered the lay evidence as lay evidence. What more do you want?
Your Honor, they did not consider the evidence as lay evidence. The Board decision, from its language and from its construction, is very clear. The lay evidence, that is the testimony on two separate occasions by Mr. King and the statement issued by his wife, were considered, but they were not given due consideration. As
what consideration more do they need to get?
They need to give what the statute under 1154A1 considers due consideration.
What more do they need?
Okay, pursuant to the
rule, you have doctors of all varieties saying this was age related, giving a very clear correlation of how that age relation occurs and how it would have occurred if it was linked to the knee, which they found it was not.
Absolutely.
So what would you expect them to do with my back hurts? I think it's because of something. How do you give that any weight?
Well, with regard to weight, Your Honor, obviously that is the province of the Board. However, this Court has spoken very clearly through the decisions in Buchanan, Jandro, Davidson, and other decisions applying those.
But in Jandro, it says we've held any evidence can be competent and sufficient to establish a diagnosis of a condition when, one, a layperson is competent to identify the medical condition; two, the layperson is reporting a contemporaneous medical diagnosis; or three, lay testimony describing symptoms at the time supports a later diagnosis by a medical professional. It seems like, from the discussion, because they look at, for example, Mrs. King's statement of what she had observed and so on, that they're saying, yeah, we looked at this stuff, but we don't find that this is a, even though, you make the argument, well, she works in a school and she's trained to look at people, but the Board seems to say, well, she's not competent, a layperson competent to identify the medical condition. They go through it. So how do you get around it?
Well, Your Honor, that's not exactly what happened. And in the court below, of course, which does have different jurisdictional bases, the argument was made, as it was at the Board, that Mrs. King had the qualifications to make a medical diagnosis. Mm-hmm. However, that is not the argument we're making here today, and this is also an argument that was made at the court below. Aside from the issue of qualification as a medical expert, the lay evidence needs to be, pursuant to Buchanan, Jandro, et cetera,
right. The
lay evidence needs to be evaluated as lay evidence in and of itself. And
percipient witness evidence.
Exactly, Your Honor. But in this particular case, the lay testimony does describe symptoms that are describable by a person.
But don't the doctors seem to take that into account?
Well, that again, that's an issue of weighing the medical evidence and weighing the other evidence. Our argument is not with the question of weight of the evidence. Our question is our issue is with the way that the Board treated the lay evidence. They did not.
They said it wasn't medical evidence, but it isn't medical evidence.
It is not medical evidence, Your Honor, and we're not claiming that it should be considered medical evidence. However, the statute, the case law indicates that clearly lay evidence must be taken along with the medical evidence and considered along with the medical evidence.
What if we agree with you that the board decision does appear inconsistent with the statute in our case law? Even if we agree that there's problematic language in the board decision, what's the likelihood that if we send it back, the board's going to come out differently? Because even taking all of it into consideration, that they're going to end up in the same place, aren't they?
Well, Your Honor, I can't say what the outcome will be. I have my own opinions. I'll keep them to myself. I haven't been doing this work long enough to I think, get down that road. However, that is an issue. But our point here is that that is what should occur. Whether the board makes the same exact decision and relabels the evidence appropriately and goes through the exercise of putting the proper language into, at least on its face, show that they've done what they are required to do, well then, this issue will have been satisfied whether we like the decision or not.
You're saying they used the wrong word?
I'm saying, Your Honor, that they never considered...
They considered it. They
not as lay evidence, Your Honor.
They considered it, but what... They used the wrong word, is that it?
Yeah, Your Honor, consideration is different from due consideration. And if you look at the language that was used by the board in this decision, starting...
You used the wrong word. That's your problem.
Well, I don't know that it's so much a matter of semantics as the fact that the tone of the decision, the tone of the language it's used, gives every impression that they simply, the board did not consider this evidence in the appropriate way. It starts out in the decision, in the findings, by stating that there is no competent medical evidence. There's no mention of lay evidence. The only treatment given to these statements, these lay statements in the decision, is found...
Not medical evidence.
Not competent medical evidence. That's correct. Now, even leaving aside the issue of what the board did, Your Honor, when we get to the Veterans Court, I think the problem is magnified because the Secretary, in their brief to the Veterans Court...
But you're not going to ask us to reverse this because of tone, which, or the wrong word, which, by the way, would be delving into the facts anyway, which is a little beyond us. You don't want us, because they used the wrong word, to change things, do you?
No, Your Honor. What we want is for this decision to be vacated and remanded down so that the board can eventually do what they are required to do. It's not a matter of tone. It's not a matter of semantics.
Back to Judge O'Malley said. You've got Dr. Eady, who goes through a detailed analysis of how, if it was related to the knee, you would see this sort of symptom. It's not. It's age-related. It's a different kind of deterioration. And you weigh that against the lay testimony and...
Well, the lay testimony, Your Honor,
You would say, oh, the lay testimony is equal to that? Is that what you want to say?
Well, I can't say that. I'm not a doctor and I'm not a judge, but I can tell you this. There is other medical evidence in the form of Dr. DeSchief, which mitigated in favor of the claimant's case. And whether or not the credibility, the competence of the lay testimony regarding the symptomatology would support that evidence to the point where it might tip the scales, I can't tell you, but I think that that is a possibility. And I think
Dr. DeSchief was his personal doctor. What about Dr. Alter?
Well, there are a lot of doctors, Your Honor, but this is not a fact issue. This is strictly a legal issue.
Your real core problem is the statement all the way below that lay evidence does not constitute competent medical evidence and lacks probative value. And you're saying lacks probative value refers to everything.
Well,
What I'm
saying is it lacks probative value for the reasons it stated that it lacks probative value, violates the rule of law. The Secretary in the court below conceded in their brief that Mr. and Mrs. King's statements were competent and credible on symptomatology. They conceded in the court below in their brief that the board did not perform a credibility analysis as would be required under Gendreau. And with all of that, the Veterans Court still affirmed the decision, still found the statement of reasons and bases to be adequate, and went as far as to say that the lay evidence was considered when it was conceded that it was not analyzed in the proper manner.
So it's your view that the Veterans Court essentially rewrote what the board did to try to save it?
I can't speculate on the Veterans Court's motives or reasons for making the decision that they did. What I can say is that based on the concessions that I just enumerated, based on the decision, the way it's written, it's hard for me to understand how the Veterans Court did not vacate this decision and send it back for a proper Gendreau analysis.
And in fact, the board cited cases from this court and from the Veterans Court that predated all of our applicable authority. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would note in addition that although it's non-precedential, the Robinson case from this court, I think, is a very good example of exactly how the evidence in these types of situations is supposed to be analyzed. And we've seen the Veterans Court use that type of analysis recently as well. There is the case of Kahana v. Shinseki, which is a panel decision. It was issued approximately 2 months after the decision in this case, in which, although a primary issue upon which the remand was given was a Colvin problem, there was also very specific language from Judge Sholin taking the board to task for the way they treated the veterans' lay evidence and the inadequacies of the reasons and bases. Additionally, there was the Goff decision, which is a non-precedential single-judge decision issued in the same time period as this case and Kahana, in which, again, the board used almost identical language in discounting the veterans' lay evidence.
But you cite to us Gendreau, and as Judge Wallach pointed out to you, Gendreau says quite clearly that lay evidence needs to be linked to some medical professional. That's what renders it valuable.
It does not, Your Honor. Lay evidence in and of itself.
The layperson is competent. That wasn't this case. The layperson reports a contemporaneous medical diagnosis. That isn't this case. Or the lay testimony describes symptoms that later supports a diagnosis by a medical professional. In this case, the medical professionals went the other way.
Well, Judge,
so in every aspect of the Gendreau instance, it's not this case.
I would respectfully disagree. And under 38 CFR sections 3.159A1 and A2, there are specific definitions provided for competency with regard to expert testimony and lay testimony. And Gendreau doesn't stand for the proposition that you have to be a medical expert. That's the problem.
In fact, in Buchanan, we defined competence to be just simply a person that would have knowledge of the facts that they were testifying to. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Probative. Let me ask you a question. I know we're eating your time. I'm sorry for that. But let me take you back to where I was. The board says lay evidence does not constitute competent medical evidence. I don't think you're fighting with that. But they say and lacks probative value. And I think you're fighting with that. Am I correct about that as a core?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that that is certainly one of the main problems that we found with that board decision and one of the main reasons why I took this case up to this court.
Okay, the problem I have with that language and lacks probative value is that despite their saying it, it looks like they went through and analyzed the lay evidence and did it pretty carefully.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. Reading the board decision, which I must have read 150 times, they the board does a very, very thorough job in describing all of the evidence except for the lay evidence. It's dealt with in a very cursory paragraph at the end and is basically thrown out with the bathwater.
Let's hear from Mr. Austin. We'll restore your rebuttal time and give Mr. Austin an extra 3 minutes if he needs to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. This Court is without jurisdiction to consider the merits of Mr. King's case. This Court is without jurisdiction primarily because, as the interchange that the Court just had with Mr. King's attorney illustrates, Mr. King is asking this Court to apply the facts of the case to the law.
All right, let's assume we have jurisdiction. Can we move past the jurisdictional
issue? When we look at the issue of jurisdiction, and assuming that this Court does have jurisdiction, then we move to the merits. When we look at the merits, it is basically, did the Veterans Court do what it was supposed to do? And the answer to that is yes.
But the question is, did the Veterans Court completely misinterpret the board decision? I mean, how many times do we have to tell the board that they're supposed to consider lay evidence and that lay evidence is competent under the statute, that it's different than your normal tort context?
Your Honor.
And let me throw in a question that goes along with that, and that is, isn't the statement that lay evidence, ellipsis, lacks probative value wrong on its face?
Your Honor, and I don't know which question to answer first, but when you look at taking the second answer, the lacks probative value, if you take that phrase in it of itself, lacks probative value, that is a correct statement in terms of that they are, that lacks probative value is not necessarily a statement that the board must make. But in this case,
I don't understand what you're saying.
I mean, you agree that it would be wrong.
It would be wrong if the board, if that was the only thing that the board said. Mr. King alleges X, we find that it lacks probative value and moves on. That would be wrong. In this case, however, the board did analyze the lay evidence in relation to the other medical evidence. Now, if you turn,
they used the wrong words, though, right?
They used the wrong, or it wasn't a model of clarity, wrong word, model of clarity, but the essence is the same.
And what if they cite 1988 cases when we have a whole host of case law that they could cite to that tells them what the standard is?
I understand, Your Honor, but when you read the board's opinion and you read it in its totality, they did do what they were supposed
to. That's a good segue here, because that's another problem I have with the board's opinion. What the board's opinion does is come to the conclusion that there's no connection, and then says, and now we're going to address the lay evidence and dismiss it. In other words, rather than consider the totality of the evidence, which includes lay evidence, it appears that the board made its decision before it even got to the lay evidence.
Your Honor, reading the board's opinion, it appears that the board did subsume both the lay evidence and the medical evidence within the same rubric of determining whether or not Mr. King has provided medical evidence to show that his back injury was related to his service-connected knee injury. But when you read their opinion, and I refer the court to appendix at page 40, prior to the paragraph in which Mr. Vernon cites, the board writes, given that the probative value of the competent medical evidence contradicting the veteran's contentions outweighs that of the supportive evidence, the board does not find that the competent medical evidence of record supports the veteran's claim. And then in the next paragraph, it does go on to talk about the lay evidence in the case, both Mr. King's lay testimony and Mrs. King. And both of those, Mr. King's lay testimony and Mrs. King's lay testimony, was subsumed within Dr. Dash's 2000 medical opinion. So when you look at what the board did, the board did, although they did not articulate it as such, they did comply with the Janneru standard, and they said, all right, lay evidence could be competent. Now, in this case, is it in fact competent on the issue of medical causation? And they concluded no. And either because it did not fit within the three-part test of Janneru, or just on its basic facts. You have
a lay... You get all of that from this one paragraph?
And reading the opinion in its totality, Your Honor, when you look at the Janneru case, the Janneru says that medical evidence, lay evidence, could be competent if, and those are the three factors that Judge Wallach laid out in terms of
right.
Is the person competent, and et cetera.
And the board opinion says neither individual has been shown to possess the requisite medical training, expertise, or credentials needed to render a diagnosis or a competent opinion as to medical causation. We have said, and the statute says, that you don't need to have medical training to render a competent opinion. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. And so the what the board did when they in the paragraph before, when they say that the given the probative value of the competent medical evidence, contradicting the veteran's contentions, they did consider his lay evidence of symptomology. But what they found was, in particular, Dr. Eddy's 2008 report, when he went through all of the medical evidence in the file. He went through 28 medical reports. He reviewed Mr. King's medical file. He did discuss the progression, the age-related progression of his back and hip disease. When you contrast that with Dr. Dash's 2000 opinion, you do find that Dr. Dash's opinion falls short. And so, but just that interchange that we just went through, Your Honor, shows that Mr. King is asking this court to apply the facts to the law. The law is that that lay evidence could be considered on the issue of medical causation. However, you still have to show that there was a nexus with the lay evidence, whether it's lay evidence or whether it's medical evidence, that there is some nexus between the diagnosis and the symptoms and, in this case, the causation.
We're just supposed to assume, even though the board didn't say that it did it, that it considered the lay evidence up front in connection with this medical analysis?
Yeah, Your Honor, I think in terms of language, that is exactly what happened, in the sense that they did not articulate that the two-step process. We find that lay evidence is competent on the issue of causation or the etiology of back disease related to an ACL reconstruction. They did not say that, but in essence, they did. When you read the board's opinion and they go through Dr. Dash's report, when they go through the 2008 medical opinion, and I might add, Your Honor, that within the board's opinion, they are the ones who directed the independent medical evaluation, the board itself. When the case first appeared before the board, you had the 2000 and the 2003 and the 2006 VA medical opinion, and you had Dr. Dash's opinion. The board at that time felt that the medical evidence was insufficient to establish a nexus one way or the other, so they sent it back as required for an independent medical expert, and that resulted in Dr. Eddy's 2008 opinion.
Let me ask you this. If your position is, well, the board really did what it's supposed to do, it just didn't articulate it, didn't say it very well, then aren't you flowing right into the alternative argument regarding the board's inadequate statement of reasons?
Your Honor, but this court's jurisdiction does not go to, in terms of the sufficiency, if you will, of the reasons or basis. It's did the court interpret a law?
If we say that the law governing X is, if the law is X and we say it's Y, I don't think the Supreme Court is going to look at us and say, well, they said the law wrong, but we're going to assume that they really applied the right law. I mean, that's what I don't get.
It's, Your Honor, the charter, if you will, of this court devolves to the question of did the Veterans Court or the Veterans Board interpret a law. In this case, the board did not interpret the law. They applied the law. And the law is that lay evidence could be competent on the issue of medical causation. They considered the lay evidence as well as the medical, and they struck a balance in favor of the independent medical expert's opinion. That is a weighing of the facts to the law. They did not interpret the law. They just applied it.
Mr. Now, Austin, the problem I have with Mr. Barron's argument and the thing I think you've got is that the board says that the lay evidence supported the claim. Before they reject it as competent medical evidence, they say the evidence supports it. They simply then apply the medical evidence against that supported evidence. That's the way I read this thing.
Yes, Your Honor. That is a correct reading of the board's opinion.
I mean, I'm looking at it, and it says the only other evidence of record supporting the veteran's claim is his own opinion, ellipsis, and that of his spouse. They're conceding that those pieces of evidence support the veteran's claim.
Yes, Your Honor. And then they took the next step and they weighed it and balanced it.
There's a word, however.
Yes, Your Honor.
Neither individual has been shown, however. That's the problem I've had with this in reading it and laying it alongside Jandrew.
Your Honor, the board's decision is not a model of clarity. It could have been written
statement.
Clear. But the question before this court is what the board did wrong to the extent that it should be sent down? And the answer to that is no. When you read the board's opinion as reiterated in the Veterans Court opinion, they did what they were supposed to do. They decided whether or not the lay evidence as well as the medical evidence supports Mr. King's claim of medical causation. And they said no. And that was based upon competent medical evidence. Now, Mr. King might have a better case if the board ruled as it did with just the VA's medical opinion, but the board sent the case back to the VA for the independent medical expert's report as reflected by Dr. Eddy's report. And in the board's opinion, they go through that report and they talk about how this court has set out the analysis in terms of competent medical evidence.
But we're not going anywhere on arguing weighing medical evidence. The question before us seems to be whether they fulfilled their obligation, both statutory and case enunciated, to consider the lay evidence in its proper format.
And they did, Your Honor. And we would submit that they did, in the sense that when you read the opinion in its totality, not isolate one phrase, but read it in its opinion, they do acknowledge that Mr. King has testified, both he and his wife have stated that they believe that his ACL knee reconstruction led to his medical and his back and hip issues.
And they acknowledge that it supports his claim.
And they acknowledge that it supports his claim, but they go a step further and say, well, what is the contradictory medical evidence? And we find, based primarily on Dr. Eddy's statement, that the symptoms that are exhibited in his back and the hip are more consistent with age-related reasons than they are with some type of weight-bearing deficiency as caused by a knee reconstruction. So the board did do what it was supposed to do. Beyond that, if this court becomes involved beyond that, then this court would be violating 38 U.S.C. 7292 in the sense that you would be weighing the application of the facts to the law.
If we doubt what the board said, if you say it's not a model of clarity and it could have been better, and yes, they probably shouldn't have phrased it that way, isn't in this context, shouldn't we give the benefit of the doubt to the veteran and just send it back to the board to articulate an appropriate analysis?
Your Honor, the phrase when you give the benefit of the doubt to the veteran.
I didn't mean that in the formal sense, but if in fact you're admitting that it's not well written, that it's not a model of clarity, that yes, in fact, they use phrases that would be wrong if taken, as you say, out of the context of reading the whole opinion, that it appears to be a wrong statement of law. If that's all the case, why shouldn't the board just have to go through the obligation of saying it correctly? If you think they can say it correctly, then maybe they should.
Your Honor, they in essence did say it correctly.
No, you keep saying in essence. You've admitted three or four times that they didn't say it well, and it's not very clear, and we've got to probe, and we've got to analyze to try to save it. So why shouldn't they just have to save it themselves?
Your Honor, if they did not put in the two paragraphs that we have been discussing on, and those are at appendix page 40 of the, and it's part of the board's report, they did consider the lay evidence on the issue of medical causation. They did not articulate it in a clear and concise two-step format. One, should the evidence, is lay evidence competent on the particular issue? And then two, is it supportive enough to where the veteran is entitled to any relief? That's the two-step process. They did not articulate it as such, but when you read their opinion, they in fact did that. We know they did acknowledge that that Mr. King and his wife, both as lay witnesses, have discussed symptomology of his back and hip issue. The board acknowledged that. The board also acknowledged that Mr. King submitted a report from a private physician who also realized that the majority of his report was based upon Mr. King and Mrs. King's lay testimony. But the board contrasted that and applied that against the other medical evidence in the record to conclude that it was not competent and lacked probative value. That is the Janneroo analysis. That is the analysis of this court. So in essence, we are talking a matter of formality or semantics versus actuality. Did the board do this or did the board not do that? And I might add that when you look at the board's opinion, when they did consider the medical evidence, we're not talking about a case where they rejected it out of hand simply because it was lay evidence. In the Davidson case, that was the case where the board said Mrs. Davidson was not competent to talk about the possible reasons which led to her husband's death. In this case, we have the board opining that it did consider the evidence, but that in essence they found that the medical evidence was not, that the lay persons weren't competent on the to identify the medical condition, that the lay persons weren't reporting contemporaneous medical diagnosis, and three, the lay testimony of both Mr. King and Mrs. King were not supported by a later...
Final thought, Mr. Austin?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Yeah, final thought?
Yes, Your Honor. The board got it right. The board considered the lay evidence. Accordingly, we urge that this court affirm the decision below.
Thank you, Mr. Barron.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's curious that today the government is arguing that the board did the analysis when in the court below they conceded that no credibility analysis was done. But I think that the Secretary's arguments today underscore the problem with this decision, which is that it does not comply with the rules of law, particularly with regard to the issue that we've been discussing all morning, which is the lay evidence, but also with regard to the issue of the statement of reasons and bases. A statement of reasons and bases has to be written pursuant to both statute and the case law in a manner that allows the claimant to understand the decision and allows the courts above to determine whether the decision was proper or not. And in this particular case, I think that the colloquy during the arguments underscores the fact that the board's decision was anything but clear. They appear to have concluded, as Judge O'Malley indicated, prior to even discussing the lay evidence at all. They say that the statement of Mr. King, along with his wife, were submitted in support of the claim, but that's not the same as saying that it's being considered as supporting evidence. It's simply a descriptor. This is, as Mr. Austin indicated, not a model of clarity. This is a decision that the Veterans Court should have recognized as a mess and should have vacated it and sent it back based on reading of the decision, based on the concessions of the Secretary in their brief, based on everything we've discussed today. And with regard to the jurisdictional arguments, clearly this court does have jurisdiction. As jurisdiction under particularly the expanded jurisdiction post Veterans Benefits Act of 2002, rule of law jurisdiction. We are not arguing the facts here. We're arguing that the law was not followed. However, I would add that based upon the concessions of the Secretary and the court below, I believe this court would also have jurisdiction as to the application of the proper law to undisputed facts, those facts being that the testimony in question was credible and competent on symptomatology, and that the board did not perform an analysis as they were supposed to per the rule of law. So we do believe there is jurisdiction, and if there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Barron.
Thank you very much.
Our next case is